Okay, so what did we discuss now previous? Plus?
Maryada Atikramana. Someone needs to maintain the Maryada or the etiquette. If there's a senior devotee, you pass on the message to the senior devotee so that he takes the classes on, and you take the class. And Maryada Purushottam's day we are celebrating tomorrow.
So yeah, we learned about this etiquette of not instructing in the presence of a senior Vaishnava. If there's a more senior devotee there, then one should refer the person one is preaching to that more senior personality. Otherwise one will commit that offence of Maryada Vyatikrama, which means that one has breached etiquette. And if one breaches etiquette, it's an aparad. And if one commits aparads, then that blocks one's spiritual advancement or one's mercy, which one naturally receives from Krishna. So therefore, Uddhava, he understood, he was qualified to instruct Vidura, but then he was thinking within himself that it would be more appropriate if Maitreya Rishi was instructing him, because Maitreya is similar in age, whereas Uddhava was much younger than Vidura, and he did not feel it was appropriate for him to begin to give the instructions in the presence or when someone who is very advanced and also very senior in age is very close by. So appreciating that etiquette, he did not begin to instruct Vidura at that time. He sent him to Maitreya Rishi, so it's important.
How come Shukadeva Goswami, who was the youngest, and even in the presence of his father and Narada Muni, who after Brahman narrated whole Bhagavatam to him, and he narrated to Vyasa, and Vyasa narrated to Shukadeva Goswami, and he still gave the class in their presence to Mahadev Parish?
Yeah, so you can do it if you get permission from that personality. Just like sometimes Prabhupada would ask one of his disciples to give class, even while he was present. Like that. Or sometimes Prabhupada would be in an airport and someone would ask Prabhupada a question and Prabhupada would say, you answer. Like that. So if one is given permission by the senior personality, then there's no offence. Any other points?
As where Buddha stayed on the earth even though he was separated from Krishna and explained how there's two kinds of service to the Guru, of Vani or Bhapu, and the Vani is more important. Although a neophyte devotee would be very enthusiastic to serve the Bhapu, the spiritual master, but when the spiritual master leaves, doesn't carry that enthusiasm into following his instruction.
Very good. Any other points?
So Uddhava was the only most qualified person in the Vedanta state to hear directly from Krishna. And that is why it was Krishna's will as well that Uddhava stayed and whole Yadu dynasty was disappeared from the earth.
That's awesome. Anything else?
It sucks that how a pure devotee can change the hearts of many people who listen to him, and also that he's free from that person, the spiritual master is free from the laws of material nature.
That is called compassion. That's all. So we understand that Uddhava only remained on the earth in order to give instruction, in order to carry the Lord's mission. So this is the missionary spirit of the disciplic succession. That the members of the disciplic succession, they understand that their duty or their obligation to the previous acharyas is that we must continue to present this message throughout the world. Now, this message must be propagated and spread throughout the world. And in this way, Uddhava, he understood, he was directly instructed by Krishna not to go back to Godhead with Krishna, but to stay in this world and to preach Krishna consciousness. So he was sent by Krishna to Bhadrik Ashram, and he was on his way to Bhadrik Ashram in order to preach the Uddhava Gita, which he had heard from Krishna, the 11th canto of the Bhagavad Gita. He was on his way to Bhadrik Ashram, and then he had heard that the Yadu dynasty had all gone to Prabhas Chetra, and they had left this world. So at that time, he travelled back to Prabhas Chetra, and he met Krishna, and Krishna instructed him in what we find now in the third and fourth canto of the Bhagavata. And then he was once again instructed by Krishna to then go back to Bhadragashram. So then he went back to Bhadragashram. Krishna left this world. And in terms of serving the mission of the instructions of Krishna, he felt that he was directly in contact with Krishna. He was not feeling separated from Krishna. And this is the important point, that when one is serving the instruction of the spiritual master, one is not separated from the spiritual master. Actually, one becomes united with the spiritual master, or one gains the spiritual master's association through serving his instruction. And if one fails to serve the instruction of the spiritual master, then one may be directly in his presence, but not receiving his mercy or his association as one should, or as powerful as one should. So therefore he understood this was his mission, and he was feeling very blissful because he was feeling like he was connected to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said that although he apparently appeared to come alone to New York from India, but when Prabhupada came to New York in 1965, he said, "I never felt like I was alone. I always felt like my spiritual master was right by my side." So that is the mood. So therefore, if one takes up this mood of preaching, one will be very close to the spiritual master. One will not feel separated from the spiritual master. One will feel very directly connected to Krishna through serving Krishna's mission like this. Any other points?
Quality-wise, he was equal to Krishna,
Uddhava.
That's why Krishna chose him to...
What does it mean that he was equal to?
I mean, he was unattached to the more potential of nature, kind of detached.
Yeah, he was, in quality, he was equal to Krishna. Krishna is fully liberated from the modes of material nature, and Uddhava, the pure devotees, are also liberated. So in that sense, he was fully qualified to represent Krishna. Anything else?
Sages were more keen to know where would Lord Krishna go after leaving this planet.
Very good. Yeah, the sages were inquiring, or they're interested. They study because they want to understand where does Krishna go when he leaves this world. Krishna is present within this world as Paramatma. But they understand through study of Vedanta that the source of Paramatma is Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna performs his pastimes in this world, but then he leaves this world. So the question of the sages is, where does Krishna go to? Where is the other place? Where is the spiritual realm in which Krishna resides eternally? So this is the Vedanta, or the end of Vedic study. This is the purpose of studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, to understand where is that place where Krishna resides when he leaves this material world. In fact, he brings his dharmas when he comes to this material world. So in one sense, he's always in that material world, in the spiritual world. So, we see in the first four chapters of the third canto, we see there's like an introduction to Vidura meeting Maitreya, the history of how Vidura came to meet Maitreya. How Vidura was banished in the first chapter from the kingdom. How he took that as the Lord's arrangement and then began to travel. And eventually he met Uddhava. And upon meeting Uddhava, he inquired from Uddhava, "Please glorify Krishna. Let me please hear about Krishna." And then Uddhava spoke in chapter 2 and chapter 3 all about Krishna's pastimes. Right? Chapter 3 was all of Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan, when he went to Dwarka and so forth. And at the end of chapter 2, we hear about Krishna's pastimes when he was within Vrindavan. So all these pastimes have been discussed. So he became very enlivened about hearing about Krishna. And then he inquired further in the beginning of the fourth chapter. But Uddhava has instructed Vidura to go towards Maitreya Rishi. So he has approached Maitreya Rishi. And now he has met Maitreya Rishi. And he is about to ask Maitreya Rishi various questions in order to understand further about Krishna. About Krishna, about the purpose of Krishna's appearance in this material world, about his disappearance, about all these different mysteries, all these things will be discussed. So we begin chapter 5. And in chapter 5 and 6 and 7, we'll see the first description, which is given in the third canto, of the creation. So now we'll become very technical very shortly, not in tonight's class, because this is an introduction to this subject, but very shortly, chapters 5, 6 and 7, it will become very technical in terms of an analysis of the creation of this material world. So you'll have to be you'll have to study this section very carefully. At the end of chapter 7, then you'll be examined. The reason I haven't examined you up until, say, chapter 5 is because the first four chapters are very much storyline and so forth. So some of the questions on the exam will be about the first four chapters, but many of the questions will be about chapters 5, 6 and 7 about the creation, because it'll become very analytical in its presentation of the creation and so forth. So you have to study it very carefully to keep up with the creation. It's a very technical subject matter like that. So.
Yeah. I happen to see a note in my manual. So the chemo versus go to the end of the chapter 5 for the exam? The chemo versus will go to the end of the chapter 5 for the exam? Yeah, because it's like 3.5.4.
So what's the question?
Chemo versus.
Yes.
Will it include from chapter 6, 7 also?
No, 6 and 7. So then you go up all 5.
The key memory verses on page 70. So which key memory verses will be in the exam? Is that the question?
Yeah, because the first five chapters.
Yes.
At the exam, before the previous schedule was only five chapters.
So the key memory verses that you have to remember for this exam is the first five which are mentioned. 3.2.23, 3.5.11, 3.5.13, 3.5.15 and 3.5.41. Yeah. Those five will be on the exam, or some of them will be. Yeah, you'll be questioned on the exam like that. And also your oral presentations will need to be done during April. So the group leaders can examine the students during April on the oral presentations. By the end of April, they should all be finished, all the oral presentations. And you should finish your essays by the end of April also, your open book essays. They can be finished by the end of April. Okay. So we'll begin chapter 5. What is chapter 5 called? Okay, Maitreya. So we'll read up to verse 16 tonight. Shukadev Goswami said, Vidura, the best among the Kuru dynasty, who was perfect in devotional service to the Lord. Thus reached the source of the celestial Ganges River Hardwar, where Maitreya, the great fathomless learned sage of the world, was seated. Vidura, who was perfect in gentleness and satisfied in transcendence, inquired from him. Vidura said, O great sage, everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to attain happiness, but one finds neither satiation nor the mitigation of distress. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities. Please therefore give us directions on how one should live for real happiness. Adrian, would you like to read?
Vidura asked Maitreya some common questions which are not ordinarily his intention. Vidura asked Vidura to approach Maitreya Muni and inquire into all the truths concerning the Lord, his name, fame, quality, form and pastimes, entourage, etc. And thus, when Vidura approached Maitreya, he should have asked only about the Lord. But out of natural humility, he did not immediately ask about the Lord, but inquired into a subject which would be of great importance to the common man. A common man cannot understand the Lord. He must first know the real position of his life under the influence of the illusionary energy. In the illusion, one thinks that he cannot be happy only by fruitive activities. But what actually happens is that one becomes more and more entangled in the network of action and reaction, and does not find any solution to the problem of life. There is a nice song in this connection. Because of a great desire to have all happiness in life, I built this house. But unfortunately, the whole scheme has turned to ashes because that house was unexpectedly set on fire. The law of nature is like that. Everyone tries to become happy by playing in the material world, but the laws of nature are so cruel that it sets fire to one's schemes. The fruitive worker is not happy in his schemes, nor is there any satiation of his continuous hankering for happiness.
What are the points of what we've made so far?
Basically, we cannot be happy with our plans. Whatever we make, any plans we make, that's necessarily not going to be happiness. Maybe temporary, but it could eventually catch fire or something. It will cause for distress.
Anything else?
The life of the living entities is governed by modes of material nature, and we are illusion in that sense. So if you're illusion, we can't understand the Lord. So that was the main reason why Vidura inquired from the common man point of view, rather than just starting with the core topics why he's inquiring about that gentleman.
When we approach the advanced Vaishnavas, we should be inquiring about where the real happiness lies.
Could you just elaborate on the sentence, you must first know the real position of his life under the influence of the illusory energy? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's part of this discussion, so we'll answer. Any other point?
Man proposes and God disposes. We try to do something so that we'll be happy, but there's no happiness in that. Only misery is coming from it.
So we see in his opening remark, he's inquiring about the problems of the material world. Now, actually, Vidura wants to know about Krishna because he is a Krishna Prema Bhakta, as been explained in the first verse. He has Achutya Bhav, which means he has love for Krishna, he has deep feeling for Krishna. This is already fully developed within his personality. He is a prema bhakta. He's not a salika. He's not a practicing devotee. So he has full God realization. And one who has full God realization has a desire to hear directly about Krishna, right? Because he has love for Krishna. Just like if you have great affinity or great attraction or great attachment to someone in this world, you want to hear about that person. You have spontaneous attachment to want to hear about that person. So a prema bhakta, or someone who has love for Krishna, they naturally want to hear about Krishna at all times, in all places, under all circumstances. That is their fully developed level of Krishna consciousness. So Vidura actually wants to hear directly about Krishna. And Maitreya is also fully developed in his prema, his love for Krishna. So he also has this enthusiasm to speak about Krishna directly. Same as Uddhava. We saw Uddhava when he was questioned by Vidura in the beginning of the end of the first chapter, please glorify Krishna. Then immediately he went into glorification of Krishna's position, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activities in Vrindavan, Krishna's activities when he leaves Vrindavan. So he immediately went into glorification of the Lord and his personal attributes. His name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes. These things were immediately described. But Vidura, being very intelligent, Maharaj Parikshit, being very intelligent, these great devotees are very intelligent. We saw in the beginning of the second canto that Maharaj Parikshit, he asked Shukadeva Goswami, he took Shukadeva Goswami's hint at the beginning of the second chapter of the second canto. When he mentioned about Shukadeva Goswami, briefly mentioned about Lord Brahma. And then in the fourth chapter, when he asked about the creation of the material world. So he understood that Shukadeva Goswami had hinted that he was desiring to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam in a categorical way, or in a systematic way. He wanted to present the creation of the material world first and Krishna's pastimes later. That is the way the Bhagavatam will systematically be presented. So Shukadev Goswami understands this methodology or the reasoning behind this, why the Bhagavatam must be spoken systematically. Parikshit Maharaj, as the perfect listener of the Bhagavatam, understands the speaker's heart, his intention. So he asks questions appropriately. And now we see in the third canto the same thing is happening, that Vidura understands what the Lord's purpose and what the Lord's mission is, that the Bhagavatam needs to be spoken systematically. Maitreya Rishi and Uddhava also understand this, that the Bhagavatam needs to be spoken systematically. And Krishna, at the very end of his pastimes in the material world, he spoke these topics to Uddhava and to Maitreya about the creation of the material world. So therefore Vidura is asking from the very beginning, please describe how to rid ourselves of suffering in this material world. Actually, for himself, he may go straight to Krishna's pastime, straight to the 10th canto. That would be his sustenance. That would be his natural inclination to hear about Krishna's pastimes directly in the 10th canto. But there's no use in a common person going directly to the 10th canto. The common person is warned not to go directly to the 10th canto. He must purify his heart of anattas first. So therefore, understanding the mission of the Lord, Vidura is asking, please tell us how to rid ourselves of the problems of material existence. Is that relevant to anyone here tonight? Hare Krishna. Problems of material existence key. Yeah. Yeah, there's no joy. It is just suffering. The material world is full of
suffering.
Amen. It is full of suffering. Right? It is not a pleasant place. It is full of the... Anyway, we'll go into this in the next few chapters. We'll see what it is for. We'll analyse it very carefully. It'll be analysed very carefully. We'll see what it is for. So we'll understand the material world is a place of suffering. So this is relevant for the conditioned souls. For liberated souls, it may not be such a relevant subject matter because they're beyond the suffering of the material world, because they've transcended duality. But those who have not transcended duality, they must first hear about the suffering of the material world, analyze it, and separate their consciousness from it. They must become detached from matter. And then they can enter into the spiritual atmosphere, or they can hear Krishna's pastimes purely. If you are not detached from matter, you cannot give your full attention to Krishna's pastimes. So therefore, the 10th canto, you will not get the full benefit of the 10th canto until you have become detached from the material world. Does that answer your question? So this is the reasoning. So this is why, that this is the mission of the Lord. That's why you'll see the Lord spoke the third and fourth canto to Maitreya and Vidura, Uddhava, just before he left this world. Because that was his mission. He could have just spoken about his own path. He could have spoken the 10th canto. He could have told them, this is what I did with the gopis in Vrindavan. This is what I did when I went with the queens in Dwarka. This is what he could have spoken those things. No, he spoke these things because he understood this was what was relevant. And in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna also speaks in a very analytical way. He doesn't speak so much lila within the Uddhava Gita. The Uddhava Gita, the 11th canto, is a summary of the entire Bhagavatam and is also very analytical. And I only found out today, I was reading today when I was studying my notes, and I only found out today, I didn't know this before, that Prabhupada actually began a summary study of the Uddhava Gita. Like that. He did a summary study of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which is the Krishna book, and he actually began a summary study of the 11th canto, which is the Uddhava Gita. I didn't know that. I only found that out today. Like that. So this is how important these messages are, which Krishna left us. These must be studied and assimilated, and then one can enter into the 10th canto properly. Did you have a point?
Yeah. Could you please explain this? You were saying that it's required to first develop detachment from matter before we can go to getting attached to Krishna. But we also simultaneously say that unless you have a higher taste, you cannot feel the lower taste. So how do you reconcile these two versions of
Yeah, it's not that we don't approach Krishna. It's not that we don't approach the 10th canto. It's not because one of the first books that Prabhupada gave us in ISKCON was the Krishna book. In 1970, Prabhupada gave Krishna book. So he gave it very early in the movement. So it wasn't that Prabhupada was saying that you will understand these things after you are liberated. You should get the higher taste by reading the Krishna book, reading the pastimes of the Lord from the very beginning of your spiritual life. So this is where the higher taste, the Parangeshwar, comes from. Right, from delving into the pastimes of the Lord and so forth. But one will not get the full benefit of them until one has become detached from matter. Therefore, there has to be a balance in the two. So therefore, it is said, if the patient is sick, if someone is sick and has a disease, so we have in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th canto, it is said to be Hridrog, which means the disease of the heart. And what is the disease of the heart of all the living entities in the material world?
Enjoy.
It is lust. Right? The desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. That is lust. Kama esha, krodha esha, raja ino samud bhava, Krishna said. So lust is the disease in the heart of all the living entities within the material world. The desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So in order to cure oneself of that lust, that propensity, then one needs to hear the pastimes of Krishna. But one can only hear the pastimes of Krishna properly when the anattas are properly removed. So therefore, if a person is a diseased person, if someone is a sick person, then they need an appropriate diet and they need appropriate medicine. These two things have to be there. If someone is diseased, you have to give appropriate diet. So what is the diet? Right? The diet is the Krishna Katha. That is the healthy food. If someone is sick, they have to eat very healthy food. So the diet is the Krishna Katha, means hearing the pastimes of Krishna. And you know that when you're recovering from your disease, then your appetite is growing, your taste comes back, like that. So it means the more that you are becoming attracted to Krishna Katha, that means the more your disease is being destroyed. But then simultaneously, if you're diseased, you also need medicine. And the medicine is the Siddhanta, or the philosophy. Like that. That cures the disease. So you need both things there in order to cure us like that. So that's the analogy which is given. Any other points?
You also find in this first 16 verses, the 10 subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam are being discussed. And in this particular verse, I thought, Uteya is being discussed, the creative impetus, in terms of asking about happiness. Would it be a way of looking at it? Because I found some of the questions are talking about Poshanam and all
those things. Yeah. It would cover something about Uteya, definitely, because that is part of that subject. It may not just be exclusively that one, but it may be definitely.
For a grunastha, when you say that one should be detached from material requirements, what does it really mean? That person should work only for 6 to 8 hours, whatever little he earns from that, support the family the rest of the time he spends in Krishna Katha or in Krishna consciousness, or something else beyond that?
More or less that. That's more or less the program. Rupa Goswami more or less gave that program for the grihasthas. Then in his time he said 50% would go towards Krishna consciousness, 25% would go towards the family, 25% would go towards emergency. And that is very difficult now because the economic condition is very artificial now. Yeah, the prices of everything is artificial now. It's not real. So, but still that basic principle should be there. Something should go towards Krishna consciousness, something should go towards the family, something should go towards emergency like that. And then the rest of the time one should engage in sadhana bhakti, or that worshipping the deity and hearing and chanting about Krishna and associating with Vaishnavas. All these things should be there. That's basically our program. Any other points? Okay. Oh my Lord, great philanthropic souls travel on earth on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to show compassion to the fallen souls who are averse to to the sense of subordination of the Lord. So this is the situation of the great souls, and this is the same way that Vidura glorified Uddhava in the previous chapters. He said that the only reason why the great souls are in this material world is to give Krishna consciousness to others. So that is their duty, that is their mission. And our mission also is the same. Our mission is to, on behalf of the previous acharyas, on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, on behalf of our gurus, our mission is to give Krishna consciousness to other people, to the common people, to the conditioned souls of that. And in this way, we'll get great mercy by fulfilling the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I am a gardener and I have many fruits within my garden of love of Godhead. But I am one person. How many fruits can I distribute by myself? So I need the help of many others to distribute these fruits. So if we assist Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in distributing these fruits of love of Godhead, then maybe he will give one of the fruits to us in due course of time. That we will also develop by his mercy, Krishna Prem. Anyone would like that? Love for Krishna can come. But will only come by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. So one must engage in this preaching spirit.
So when they come delivering into the source of Krishna, they rather suffer than surfing. Just a nice.
And for many lifetimes we were one of those.
Yeah, of course.
And now we are waking up a little bit.
Yeah.
Prabhupada said that do you want me to ask me to if the living being becomes averse to his sense of subordination to the Lord?
Very good. Nice point.
Do you want me to ask me to?
Yeah.
Sometimes you think it could be a need of things.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point because it means that when someone commits sin, when someone commits some sinful activity, then his desire to serve Krishna diminishes. Because that sinful activity leaves an impression upon the consciousness. And that impression which is embedded into the consciousness makes the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna stronger. So the more one engages in sinful activity, the more difficult it is for them to understand Krishna. So then sometimes you preach to people and you speak to them about Krishna consciousness, but they cannot understand what you're talking about because they're committing sinful activity. And that is polluting the consciousness and making the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna stronger. So therefore one has to refrain from committing sinful activity. Therefore when we take initiation, we take the vow to follow four regulative principles. Now look, following those four regulative principles will not take you back to Godhead in and of themselves. But if you don't follow them, then you will increase your desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So therefore they must be followed as nisheda or do nots. Because then the vidhi or the positive thing, which is the chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds a day, that will only become effective if one is not engaging in sinful activities. Otherwise Prabhupada said it's like mixing oil and water. They will not mix. They are separate, they're two different things. So you cannot have, as Prabhupada pointed out in the second canto, the desire for sense gratification and Krishna consciousness go ill together. And you cannot have sense gratification and Krishna consciousness. Because you will not advance, because your consciousness will keep desiring material things and you'll not be able to focus on Krishna.
And just further on, Prabhupada,
said
that all fruits are activity, including empirical philosophy and mysticism also more or less against the sense of subordination to the world.
Yeah, so it means karma and jnana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which Rupa Goswami says these two things they cover bhakti. Like that. Bhakti means it has to be free from anyabhilashita shunyam, jnana, karma, and abhritam. From these coverings of these material things.
And couldn't we classify all of these into one word as ignorance?
Yeah.
Right?
Avijja. Yeah, Rupa Goswami says that in the Nectar Devotion. It's because of avijja. And because of avijja, then one performs pap or sin. And then when one performs pap or sin, then bija comes.
Yeah.
within the heart, mm-hmm. and the seeds in the heart of bija, and that is what causes the that goes on to the next, the increased stage of it. So then that will cause the living entities to stay in the material world lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, because the seed of desire to enjoy separate from Krishna remains in the consciousness. That causes repeated birth.
Yeah, that's
simple.
But how we distinguish between sense gratification and getting along with somebody? So hard. So we don't know whether we are subtly enjoying the senses or getting along with them or something like that. So why you draw that line?
Then you have to see what is the common activity while you're associating with them. What is the activity? Because whenever two people come together, there's an activity.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do something together.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll talk about something together. It's an activity.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to see, when you associate with someone who is a non-devotee, what is the activity? What is the common ground?
Mm-hmm.
And if it means that the association is based on sense gratification,
mm-hmm.
then that will influence your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if the association is based on something related to Krishna, that will influence their consciousness
mm-hmm.
and your consciousness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's better to avoid it.
You can't avoid it altogether, but you have to be careful how much you take of it,
mm-hmm.
because it means you have to associate with them something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can avoid
some material activity, maybe. For some material activity, we associate. We have to be
really
careful,
isn't it? The point is, you have to be careful, because if you associate with them too much or too whimsically, then you'll see that it will begin to affect your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And your desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, that spirit will come back.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make that spirit become less instead of more.
Yeah, our intention is that we have to preach to them, not like...
That's the best. The best is if you can preach. You can't always preach to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not
but
all
we are not powerful enough to preach.
Even you may be powerful, but they're not ready to listen. So therefore, you just have to be careful. You have to associate with them, because you can't avoid it.
Make sure nothing happens to our consciousness.
Yeah, well, make sure that nothing too much is happening.
Mm.
Even a little bit of association, you'll get affected.
Mm.
But you just have to learn. Like, you have to associate with them.
Mm.
All of our families.
Mm.
Like, when I see my family, then it affects the consciousness,
mm.
right? Because the association is not based on Krishna,
mm.
like that. So then over time, as a devotee, when you've been a devotee for some time,
mm-hmm.
you have to say, okay, how much can I take
mm-hmm.
without becoming too affected?
Mm-hmm.
So you go there and you have some association.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a certain point where you cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't spend too much time with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
Like
that, yeah. Just like my wife's gone travelling for 2 months with her family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she rang me up last week. She'd only been with them for about 4 or 5 days. And she said, my mother is starting to drive me nuts. So this is the point.
People associating, you have to chant a lot and then associate.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do. Before they get
to her mother talks all the time. So then she looks at her and she goes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Not really, but the point is that, if you have too much association with the non-devotees, it will affect your consciousness. Any other points?
So the Vaishnava Sampradaya, because the Kamaja Sampradaya and our Sampradaya, they're all both Vaishnava Sampradayas, and there, once they take the initiation from their spiritual master, at the time of initiation, the spiritual master tells the disciple that you will not have another birth. You follow your normal family life and whatever the instructions the spiritual master gives, just follow it and you will not have any birth. And it is, the disciple takes it as a normal practice, not normal practice, he takes it as a matter of fact that, well, the person is not going to have the next life itself or next birth itself.
But it depends on how strictly the disciple follows the instructions, is the point. If the disciple follows perfectly the instructions of the spiritual master, he will not take birth again. But if the disciple does not follow perfectly, like I can't say I'm perfectly following my guru.
Then I don't think the spiritual master is perfect. He said, well, these are the instructions to be followed, and the disciple does follow the instructions. But
yeah, but the point we're making is it's not an automatic thing. It's not automatic. It's not just, you take initiation, now you're going to go back to Godhead.
Well, the rest of the act is whatever they are doing in a family life, they continue to do in within the pious.
Yeah, that's not really, it doesn't work like that. The point is that it comes down to the application of the disciple following the guru's instructions. How much they apply themselves to the instructions. How much they follow house and ceiling. I can't say that I'm following my spiritual master perfectly. If I do follow my spiritual master perfectly, then I know I'll go back to Godhead. Because that is the secret of how to go back to Godhead. But I can't say at this point in time I'm doing it perfectly. So I'm not guaranteed to go back to Godhead unless I do begin to follow perfectly. So the mood of the disciple is to try to become a perfect follower of the spiritual master's instructions. It's not an automatic thing, that's the point. Nothing is automatic.
Can I add on this point?
Very quickly.
Those days what happened was when a person got married, they would get them initiated straight away because that gives them the qualification to do certain things, which otherwise they're not allowed to, like cooking for old people and things like that. But these days, if a person realizes what the importance is of getting initiated and gets initiated, and that thing, and if there is a desire, according to the thing, Ramanujacharya has taken a promise from Mahalakshmi that all his followers would automatically get liberated if they get initiated. That's what on a particular day when the Lord in Sri Rangam and the Lord and his consort are together, he goes and gets a promise. Mm. And so that, which is actually the day's next week sometime. Mm. So because of that promise, and when the person gets initiated, the Acharya prays to the Lord that this person is coming in such and such a line, right? And remember Ramanujacharya's promise and help them. That's the...
So it's the power of the pure devotee. Mm-hmm. If the pure devotee prays on our behalf, then something miraculous can happen. Mm-hmm. Like that. But still, our philosophy is that the disciple must follow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's there. The desire to...
And the way we're taught is the disciple must follow sincerely. It's not an automatic thing. That's the point I'm making. Like that. These benedictions can be given. But still, we don't think of it like that. We don't think, oh, now I'm going to be liberated like that. We have to become very pure in our heart like that. That's our way of thinking. That's the way we're taught as the Buddhists. Okay. I'm going to have to keep moving.
On Ashoka Vipravani, also liberation is not the goal for the devotees. It's the point is, because Krishna gives easy liberation, it's not a problem, but you have to develop relationship. If you don't develop your relationship now in Raganuga Bhakti, you might end up on Vaikuntha or somewhere else. So we have to make endeavor to advance now. Mm. Because liberation is not a problem for us. Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are most merciful. Mm.
Good point. Therefore, O great sage, please give me instruction on the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, so that he who is situated in the heart of everyone can be pleased to impart from within knowledge of the absolute truth in terms of the ancient Vedic principles delivered only to those who are purified by the process of devotional service. So Prabhupada does mention in this purport about the path of Vaidhi Bhakti and the path of Raga Bhakti. In the second paragraph, Prabhupada says, the Gauri's yogis and karmis cannot expect this direct cooperation of the Lord. They are not able to satisfy the Lord by transcendental loving service, nor do they believe in such service to the Lord. The bhakti process is performed under the regulative principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, or devotional service following the prescribed rules and regulations, is defined by the revealed scriptures and confirmed by great acharyas. This practice can help the neophyte to rise to the stage of Rag Bhakti, in which the Lord responds from within as the Chaitya Guru, or the spiritual master, as super consciousness. So this is the more developed state of bhakti, which we are in our Pacific succession, as follows of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is emphasizing this type of bhakti, Raga Bhakti, which means spontaneous devotional service. So we should always be aiming for this kind of mood to come in our devotional service. Spontaneous devotional service. Not that the devotional service is simply done on the basis of rules and regulations. Not because we have to do it. But rag means because we want to do it. So that type of bhakti needs to be cultivated within our practice. Within our deity worship, especially. This mood has to come. Right? A desire that you want to serve the Lord. You want to please the Lord. Not that I'm offering the garland because I have to offer a garland. No, because I want to offer the garland. And I want to offer the best garland. This is rag. Rag means spontaneously. The mood is coming, the devotion is flowing towards Krishna. It is being done for Krishna's pleasure. The pleasure is increasing and increasing. Right? The mood of wanting to please Krishna is increasing and increasing. And the desire to please Krishna's senses and to give Krishna service as he desires is increasing. And we have a desire to see Krishna pleased, Krishna satisfied. I will offer the service as Krishna likes it. Right? So this is the mood of rag. This must come. In our chanting also this must come. Not chanting mechanically because of Vaidhi, because we have to finish 16 rounds, but because we want to chant 16 rounds. And then Prabhupada says, why not 16,000 rounds? Why not so much pleasure and taste? This is rag, which it should be coming. So this is what we are aiming for. This is what we are striving for in our bhakti. Not that it is just governed by Vaidhi or by the rule that we must do it. But because we want to do it, because we want to develop taste for our devotional activities. So this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching specifically. And this kind of mood leads one to Vrindavan. In Vrindavan there was no rules and regulations. No one's love, no one's service to Krishna is governed by having to,
spontaneity.
Yeah, spontaneity, but no one's service in Vrindavan is governed by...
And the duty.
Yeah, like that, by duty. It's not that they have to serve Krishna, but rather they desire to serve Krishna. It's like Prabhupada explained that in Vrindavan, all the food which is cooked within Vrindavan is already prasad. Prabhupada has explained that. He explains this to Hari Sauri and Hari Sauri Guru's diary. So everything in Vrindavan is already prasad. So then Hari Sauri Guru asked Prabhupada, then why do we offer food to the deity? It's already prasad, then why do we offer it to the deity? And the Prabhupada says, because Krishna is hungry. That is the mood of the Brijvasis. Krishna is hungry. Not because he is God, you know, and all we must offer seven offerings a day, you know, because, you know, he's the Supreme Lord and this is our Vaidhi, this is our rule. No, Krishna is hungry. And he must be hungry, therefore we will cook. And then when we make the offering for Krishna, Prabhupada said Krishna is a young boy. Krishna is Navayovana. He is Kunja Kishore, which means he is eternally 16 years old. Right? 16-year-old boys have very strong appetite. So when we make the bowl for Krishna, you have to fill it up. You know, sometimes you'll see devotees make the offering that the bowl is only half full. This is not. Krishna has only half a bowl. Krishna wants a big bowl, full. The current subject. Right? And then you'll see, like if you see what Krishna has on his offering tonight, the 840 offering, right there. Prabhupada said there must be, how many quarters on that offering? Is it eight? On each plate, I think. No, Prabhupada didn't say it was four. Prabhupada said four very big ones, or eight medium ones, or 16 small ones. I think that's what he said. Specifically, he said that. So, Krishna wants, you know, big, puffed up puris, right? And nice ladu, right? And hot, sweet milk, right? So, this is how the devotee is thinking when he's making the offering. Not Krishna has to have it, but Krishna wants it. No, we're not thinking, oh, Krishna has to have... no, not Krishna has to have it, but Krishna wants it. But there's a difference. Everyone understands? There's a difference in the mood. Rag, right, means Krishna wants it. Right? So therefore we have like a rag. We have a spontaneous desire to please Krishna. Not that we have to please Krishna, but we want to please Krishna. Right, so this is the mood that Krishna Mahaprabhu is teaching. This is the mood of bhakti that leads to Vrindavan. So we have to cultivate that mood now, devotional service. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is independent, desireless, who is the independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds and the controller of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regulative principles for its maintenance. So he's beginning to ask questions about the creation. Like that, and this is leading to the discussion which is about to take place. He lies down on his own heart, spread in the form of the sky. And thus placing the whole creation in that space, he expands himself into many living entities, which are manifested as different species of life. He does not have to endeavor for his maintenance, because he is the master of all mystic powers and the proprietor of everything. Thus he is distinct from the living entities. So something about the living entities being created. Right? This is what will be discussed in these next few chapters. How the living entities are impregnated by the glance of the Lord into the universes. Right? Into the various universes of creation. Like that, which are coming from the pores of Mahavishnu. So these things are about to be discussed. So he's giving some questioning leading to this kind of information to be discussed for our benefit. Now, from verse 7 to verse 16, there is glorification of what? Anyone who's gone ahead and... Not really. No. Obviously you haven't read it. Let's just all speculate. Let's just say anything. Let's just say, what's it going to be about? The next 7 verses. Right? It's going to be, you can say whatever you want it's about, because I haven't read it, so actually I don't know.
Puris.
What's that?
Puffed up puris.
Very good, that's right.
Verse 7 starts about the auspicious characteristics of the Lord.
It does, yeah. But the next, from verses 7 to 16, there's a glorification of Krishna Gita. Right? The importance of hearing about Krishna. Right? And the reason this is here is because this is what the subject matter is going to be. Yeah. All of this subject matter is directly about Krishna. Right? It is leading to Krishna. Because even though we're about to hear about the creation is ultimately taking place under the empowerment of Krishna. It is directly coming from Krishna. Lord Mahavishnu is the expansion of Krishna, who on behalf of Krishna creates this material world. So this is the conversation which is about, so he's asking about Krishna. And these topics about Krishna, because the Srimad Bhagavatam, everything within the Srimad Bhagavatam is leading to Krishna. Right? It is all this conversation which is about to take place and this description of the creation is simply to detach us from the material energy so that we can become fully immersed in hearing about Krishna. That is the purpose of this conversation. So therefore, all of this conversation is just about glorifying Krishna. So the next few verses, from verses 17 to 16, he's glorifying Krishna Katha, the potency of Krishna Katha. The necessity of hearing Krishna Katha repeatedly and always. This is the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. This is how you serve the Bhagavatam. How do you serve the Bhagavatam? Hearing it when?
Nitya.
Nitya. Nitya means?
Regularly.
Daily.
Continuously. Daily. Like that. So then this is how we serve the Bhagavatam. By always hearing about Krishna. So the glories of Krishna Katha. So this will be explained in the next few verses, the potency of Krishna Katha. You may narrate also about the auspicious characteristics of the Lord in his different incarnations for the welfare of the twice born, the cows and the demigods. Our minds are never satisfied completely, although we continuously hear of his transcendental activities. This is the symptom of one who has taste for hearing about Krishna. This is mentioned in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Tataruchi.
One has to develop this taste for hearing about Krishna. If one has a taste for hearing about Krishna, then what is the symptom according to this verse?
Never tired.
One never tires. He wants to hear more and more and more about Krishna. It's not that he goes to Bhagavatam class and falls asleep. What sort of a pastime is this? You come to Bhagavatam class and fall asleep. What did Prabhupada say to devotees who are falling asleep in class?
Sleep 20 hours if necessary, but don't fall asleep in my class.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Read the Shri Kirti?
No, he wrote it in a letter.
So Prabhupada would say, sometimes he'd say to devotees that are falling asleep, he'd say, go and take rest. Right? But don't fall asleep when you're hearing Krishna Katha. That's the point. Because Krishna Katha is non different from Krishna. It's an offense that Krishna is personally present in Krishna Katha. So then if you're falling asleep in front of the deity, it's an offence. If you're falling asleep in front of the Bhagavatam, it's an offence. Right? So therefore, do not fall asleep at this time. But one should be the opposite. One should be relishing so much you cannot sleep. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan reduced their sleeping to only 1.5 hours a day. That's how absorbed they were in hearing Krishna Katha. Right? They would sit together and for 3 or 4 hours, Raghunath Bhatti Goswami would just chant the Bhagavatam. And chant for the Bhagavatam. The six Goswamis would sit there with their associates and just listen to the Bhagavatam being chanted and recited, and they'd just be discussing Krishna Katha 3 or 4 hours a day. Raghunath Das Goswami, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, he wanted to commit suicide by jumping off Govardhan Hill because he could not tolerate the separation from Mahaprabhu. So he walked from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan, and when he got to Vrindavan, he went and paid his obeisances to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, and he said, I'm now going to leave this world because I cannot bear the separation of Mahaprabhu. And they said, no. They said, you must stay in this world, and every day you must sit on the banks of Radhakund and you must deliver discourses and glorification about your association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So for every day, Raghunath Das Goswami would sit on the bank of Radhakund, and for 3 hours he would speak about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what he spoke is what is recorded in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Like that. So this is Krishna Katha. Krishna Katha means you relish hearing it. Yeah. So this is the Chatur Shloki of the Gita. It's like the essence of the Gita. Yeah. The Lord Krishna himself says that one should have Tushya Rama. One should be getting nourishment, one should be getting pleasure and nourishment from hearing Krishna Katha. Like this. So these verses which we're about to hear up until verse 16, they just glorify again and again and again the potency of hearing Krishna Katha. The Supreme King of all kings has created different planets and places of habitation where living entities are situated in terms of the modes of nature and work. And he has created their different kings and rulers. So this will be discussed in the next few cantos. How Krishna creates the material world and then creates the different planets in the material world. Which subject matter is this?
Stanam.
Very good, yeah. How Krishna creates the material world. When the planets are created, then the manus come and they begin to progenate and create the different species of life who will populate the different planetary systems, like that. So all of this will be described in the next few cantos, how this will develop and take place. Okay. O chief amongst the Brahmanas, please also describe how Narayana, the creator of the universe and the self-sufficient Lord, has differently created the natures, activities, forms, features, and names of the different living creatures. Oh, my Lord. Is that door shut? Oh, my Lord, I have repeatedly heard about this higher and lower status of human society from the mouth of Vyasadeva, and I am quite satiated
with all those lesser subject matters and their happiness. They have not satisfied me with the nectar of topics about Krishna. Prabhupada says, if you read this whole purport, it's a long purport, it's a very wonderful purport, this particular purport. Prabhupada says at the end of the first paragraph, for example, Mahabharata is the history of the battle of Kurukshetra, and common people read it because it is full of topics regarding the social and political and economic problems of human society. But factually, the most important part of the Mahabharata is the Bhagavad Gita, which is automatically taught to readers, although along with the historical narrations of the battle of Kurukshetra. So, Vidura is saying here, because Vidura has directly associated with Vyas. Who is Vidura in relationship to Vyas?
Son.
He's his son. Right? So he's directly associated with Vyas. Right? Who is the great sage who compiled the Vedas. He compiled the Mahabharata, he compiled the Ramayana. Right? All the great scriptures, he has compiled them. And he has heard directly from him. Vyas would come and visit the court of the Pandavas. Right? And he's directly heard from him. Mahabharata, he's heard of all these things. But still, the taste is not as sweet as what is found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in the Bhagavatam, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, Jnana Kamadhyanavritam, Anukuyena Krishnanam Shilana Bhakti, then it is pure devotional service, which is being glorified, which is being presented in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Whereas in the Mahabharata, as Prabhupada says here, there are many political, social, economic situations which are being described, and then these things are in relation to Krishna. Whereas in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is the central focus, and everything else is simply related to that, like that. Whereas in the Mahabharata, then there's so much intrigue and politics and war and so many things going on within the kingdom, and Krishna is threaded within it. So it is transcendental, but it's not the same as the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, which is directly spoken by Krishna. You should read that purport. You should read all the purports. But that one's very wonderful. Prabhupada says at the end of that purport, there are two important Krishna katas current in the world, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna Katas because it is spoken by Krishna, whereas Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna Katas because it narrates about Krishna. Lord Chaitanya advised all his disciples to preach Krishna Katas all over the world without discrimination, because the transcendental value of Krishna Katas can purify one and all from material contamination. And as Prabhupada said in the previous chapter, what was spoken in the Uddhava Gita was not even spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita is even more confidential than the Bhagavad Gita. Like that. So this is being, Prabhupada is saying, the Gita and the Bhagavad Gita are completely pure, completely transcendental literatures. And they'll Prabhupada says here, they'll purify anyone who hears their message. Who in human society can be satisfied without hearing sufficient talk of the Lord, whose lotus feet are the sum total of all places of pilgrimage, and who is worshipped by great sages and devotees? Such topics can cut off one's bondage to family affection simply by entering the holes of one's ears. Yeah, that's a KMV.
But Prabhupada was mentioning before that my brothers, when they read, they make offense, they read and make commentaries and make offenses, and then they go even to hell.
So Prabhupada explains in the next few chapters in some of the purports, he says the condition of the heart is what is important. Right? Because if the heart is not fertile, or Prabhupada gives the example, if the land is has been cultivated or prepared, right? Because the farmer has gone out and he's prepared the land, then when it rains, then you'll have agriculture, right? You'll have growth, right? But if there's nothing prepared previously, even when the rain comes, then you won't get any result, So similarly, if people do not prepare their heart or their consciousness, even when they hear the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavad Gita, it cannot affect. Because like, Prabhupada explains this in a few chapters, but yeah, in relation to this, but also in relation to another point. It's very interesting. So we'll go into the next few chapters. So just meditate on this one verse, verse 11. Right? How powerful this verse is.
He mentions this even in the previous canto, comparing it to a snake's ears and each of the use of having a head if you don't bow down before the Lord.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In chapter 3 of canto 2. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, same points made. So just meditate on this one verse, right? How powerful this message is. And if one can meditate on this verse and get some inspiration from it, it can change one's life. Therefore, it has been said in the first canto, in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that the Bhagavad Gita has the potency to create a revolution in the misdirected lives of the civilization of this world. Right? It will create a revolution. So we meditate on this one verse. Who in human society can be satisfied without hearing sufficient talk of the Lord, whose lotus feet are the sum total of all places of pilgrimage, and who is worshipped by great sages and devotees? Just like we feel ourselves, when we do not have sufficient Krishna Katha, we feel like we are in a desert. You know, sometimes you get, you know, in a situation where you do not have the association of the devotees for a few days, you don't have sufficient Krishna Katha, and you feel like you're in a desert. Yeah? So this is the potency of the Katha. Such topics can cut off one's bondage to family affection simply by entering the halls of one's ears. This is the potency of Krishna Katha. It means that you will lose your mundane attachments. Right? Your family life will become completely spiritualized by hearing Krishna Katha. Because the family life will be based on devotion and service to Radha and Krishna. Right? As opposed to just mundane family attachment and affection. All that will be completely purified. And all that material contamination will be removed just by hearing about Krishna. Your friend, the great sage, Krishna Dvaipayan Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the massive people to Krishna Katha, the Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. So anyone who has heard the Mahabharata, it is captivating. Right? The story is such a powerful epic. Right? It's far more powerful than any of the epics which are created within this material world. Right? All the stories of all the different cultures. Right? The Greek mythology, the Roman mythology. Right? There's some amazing stories there. You know, if you look back into their histories and some of the stories, they're very amazing stories. But then when you come to the Mahabharata, there's nothing which compares to it. It is such a captivating story. But then when your attention is fully captivated, right at the moment when the battle, which is being led up to and led up to and led up to, when the battle is just about to begin, then Krishna places the Bhagavad Gita there to purify the consciousness of the conditioned souls. That's his whole plan. That's what the whole Mahabharata was for, just so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. For one who is anxious to engage constantly in hearing such topics, Krishna Katha gradually increases his indifference towards all other things. Just see the potency of these verses. There's another key. Just see the potency of these verses. For one who is anxious to engage constantly in hearing such topics, Krishna Katha gradually increases his indifference towards all other things. Such constant remembrance of the lotus feet of the Lord Krishna by the devotee who has achieved transcendental bliss vanquishes all his miseries without delay. Right? This is the perfection of human life. Right? If one is looking for the antidote or the remedy or the cure for all of one's material problems, it is given in this verse. Right? You simply absorb yourself in Krishna Katha, right? And all of your problems will be completely they'll be completely vanquished by the potency of Krishna Katha.
O sage, persons who, because of their sinful activities, are averse to the topics of transcendence, and thus ignorant of the purpose of the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, are pitied by the pitiable. I also pity them, because I see how their duration of life is spoiled by eternal time, while they involve themselves in presentations of philosophical speculation, theoretical ultimate goals of life, and different modes of ritual. It means this is the most pitiable situation that someone can be in, if someone doesn't have any attraction to hearing about Krishna. It means even someone who is piteous, or someone who is... it means someone who is in that condition, or someone who is in the very low condition, even they pity that person. It means it's like lowest of the lowest situation, like that. Makes sense?
Yeah, but if I think the pitiable, they will be ignorant, and if they're ignorant, how they can pity even those people, because they...
It's like a poor man, like someone who's a beggar, and then he turns around and says, "Oh, look at that beggar."
Okay.
You know, he is poor man, but then he's saying, "Well, he's really poor." So that's how far down that person is. If one has no taste for Krishna Katha, then he is completely. O Maitreya, O friend of the distressed, the glories of the Supreme Lord can alone do good for people all over the world. Therefore, just as bees collect honey from flowers, kindly describe the essence of all topics, the topics of the Lord.
Can be.
So just as the bees collect nectar from the flowers. So Prabhupada gives this analogy that the flies are always looking for?
Stool.
The flies. The flies are always looking for? Yeah, impure things. Right? The fly will always go to something impure. But the bee is always attracted to the pollen. Right, to the nectar, which you can make into honey, like that. So the bee, the devotee is like the bee, he's always attracted to the sweet things. He's always attracted to hearing about Krishna. Right? Whereas the materialist is always attracted to hearing about anything except Krishna. Right? As soon as you begin to speak about Krishna, the materialist just automatically does not have interest. Automatically, like, you can just see the consciousness automatically just turning away. Like that. But as soon as the devotee hears about Krishna, he's like a bee, becomes alert. Right? But the non-devotees, you begin to preach about Krishna, they just become like totally disinterested. Like that. So the devotee was like the bee looking for the nectar. And the final verse. Kindly chant all those superhuman transcendental activities of the supreme patrol of the personality of Godhead, who accepted incarnations fully equipped with all potency for the full manifestation and maintenance of the cosmic manifestation. Sorry, creation. Okay. So now, from here on in, we'll begin to go into a very elaborate discussion of the creation. And we'll begin to manifest like here. So now you have to become very... I would suggest you begin reading the purports. You know, it's because it becomes very technical from here on in. So you'll want to... If you want to assimilate it, and if you want to learn it, and actually understand it, you'll have to study it very seriously. So the homework will be verses 17 to 26. Okay. So we'll go through it a little thoroughly, right? Because this section is very deep, so we'll have to go through it very progressively. We'll have to study it very carefully. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.